Hey, it's Otis here. Before we get to the bedtime reading, I wanted to let you know that I just launched a brand new show. It's called The Daily Book Club, a daytime companion to Sleepy, where you hear entire books one chapter at a time, one day at a time. Simple as that. So if Sleepy is how you wind down your day, The Daily Book Club is a great way to start your day. There's new episodes daily. I read in a slightly peppier voice so that you can get really lost in these amazing stories that have stood the test of time. Or, just like Sleepy, you can sit back and relax and zone out to a good book. The first book we'll be reading is The Enchanted April by Elizabeth Von Arnim. Story is, in the 1920s, four women unfulfilled with life take a chance and abscond to a dreamy medieval Italian castle. It's a story dripping with wisteria, the beauty of solitude, and an unlikely pursuit of joy in Portofino, Italy. I think that this is a perfect story for the season, and you can hear it now. Find the Daily Book Club on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and everywhere else. This show has been a long time coming, and I'm so excited to bring you even more stories. So go subscribe to the Daily Book Club to hear what happens next. Thanks. This episode of Sleepy is proudly sponsored by ButcherBox. If you've listened to Sleepy for a while, you know that I love good food, eating well, and treating my body right so that I can take on my days. Well, ButcherBox helps you do exactly that. They deliver super high quality, 100% grass-fed beef, free-range organic chicken, crate-free pork, and wild-caught seafood right to your door. It's humanely raised, no antibiotics or added hormones. They have a huge variety to choose from. They are excellent deals. They've got recipes and guides and tips included, and there's free shipping, always. Eating well is a huge factor in getting a good night's sleep, as is sometimes saving the trip to the grocery store and taking some stress out of your daily schedule. I have been loving these deliveries for those reasons. Been cooking up their steak tips with eggs in the morning, with butter and scallions and soy sauce, and I also made a delicious brine chicken roast with lemon parsley gravy. So good. The prices for this kind of quality and convenience is really impressive. ButcherBox has made me very happy. So sign up at butcherbox.com/sleepy and get our special deal. ButcherBox is offering our listeners a free for a year offer plus an additional $20 off. Choose salmon, chicken breast, or steak tips free in every order for a year. Sign up today at butcherbox.com/sleepy and use code SLEEPY to choose your free for a year offer. Plus, get $20 off your first order. butcherbox.com/sleepy. Eat well, sleep well.
Imagine unlocking a version of yourself that's unstoppable, where mental barriers no longer hold you back. Listen to Mentally Stronger with me, Amy Morin, therapist and international best-selling author, here to guide you on a journey to reaching your greatest potential. Every Monday, I bring you into conversations with some of the most fascinating minds, experts, authors, entrepreneurs, athletes, and musicians. They don't just share stories. They reveal the mental strategies that propelled them to the top. But here's the real magic. At the end of each episode, I break down their wisdom into practical therapist-approved advice. In my solo episodes, I dive deep into the techniques that build mental strength. It's like having your own personal therapy session as you discover how to turn these insights into steps you can take right now. This podcast isn't just for those facing mental health challenges. It's for anyone who wants to push their limits, achieve peak performance, and truly thrive. Are you ready to unlock your full potential? Then it's time to become mentally stronger. Subscribe to Mentally Stronger with therapist Amy Morin, available wherever you love to listen to podcasts.
Hey, my name's Otis Gray, and you're listening to Sleepy. A podcast where I read old books to help you get to sleep. I've got a book for you tonight that I have been wanting to read for a very long time, and that is The Mark of Zorro. And before we get to this bedtime reading tonight, I just want to profoundly thank all of our wonderful new patrons on Patreon.com. which is a website where you can go and support Sleepy for a couple bucks in exchange for an ad-free version of the show. So, this week's amazing new patrons: Raven Nevermore, Yes Dog, Christine Cowpie, Elizabeth, Heather Erickson, Melanie Chernick, and Michael Berkeley. Thank you so, so much for donating and being a part of making this show. It really, really means a lot. And for any of you who don't know, these names that I just read are brand new supporters on Patreon.com, which is a website where you can directly support the people who make the stuff that you like. So, if you like the Sleepy Podcast and you want to be a part of making this show in exchange for cool stuff, then go to patreon.com/sleepyradio. Again, at $2 a month, you get access to the totally ad-free version of Sleepy. At $5, you get access to the poetry feed, which has all kinds of episodes you never heard before. And even if you give a dollar, that really goes a long way. And even at a dollar, I will read your name in the opening credits of the next show after you donate. So again, if you want to be a part of making this show, go to patreon.com/sleepyradio. Thank you. And as always, the music you're hearing is by my good friend James Lepkowski, and the cover art for Sleepy is by Gracie Kanan. Well, tonight I'm going to be reading a really incredible story that very much makes sense how it stood the test of time and has become such a big part of pop culture, literary culture, film history. The Mark of Zorro is a wonderfully told, swashbuckling story of justice and adventure. It's really, really wonderfully written. Such a pleasure to read. And I think it's going to be fantastic to go to sleep to for you. And it's also kind of a riveting story where you really want to know what happens next. This is the exact kind of story that we'll be reading on the brand new podcast that you may have heard a promo for in the beginning of this show. Today, I am launching a new show called The Daily Book Club. It is the daytime companion to Sleepy. And on The Daily Book Club, I read full books, one chapter at a time, one day at a time. Simple as that. So for books like this, where you may go to sleep to and just relax to, or you really want to know what happens next, that is the exact kind of story I'll be reading on The Daily Book Club. And you can find The Daily Book Club officially today on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and everywhere else. So whether you want to relax to a good book, just like this show, or you want to really get engaged and hear what happens next and a good story, that's what you can do in The Daily Book Club. But for tonight, I am so happy to bring you The Mark of Zorro by Johnston McCulley. And now is the time for you to fluff up your pillow just how you like it. Feel yourself melt into your bed. Get real comfortable. Close your eyes. And let me read to you. Chapter 1. Pedro the Boaster. Again the sheet of rain beat against the roof of red Spanish tile, and the wind shrieked like a soul in torment, and smoke puffed from the big fireplace as the sparks were showered over the hard dirt floor. "'Tis a night for evil deeds," declared Sergeant Pedro Gonzalez, stretching his great feet in their loose boots toward the roaring fire, and grasping the hilt of his sword in one hand and a mug filled with thin wine in the other. "Devils howl in the wind, and demons are in the raindrops. 'Tis an evil night indeed. Eh, señor?" It is, the fat landlord agreed hastily, and he made haste also to fill the wine mug again, for Sergeant Pedro Gonzalez had a temper that was terrible when aroused, as it always was when wine was not forthcoming. An evil night, the big sergeant repeated, and drained the mug without stopping to draw breath, a feat that had attracted considerable attention in its time, and had gained the sergeant a certain amount of notoriety up and down El Camino Real, as they called the highway that connected the missions in one long chain. Gonzalez sprawled closer to the fire, and cared not that other men thus were robbed of some of its warmth. Sergeant Pedro Gonzalez often had expressed his beliefs that a man should look out for his own comfort before considering others. And being of great size and strength, and having much skill with the blade, he found few who had the courage to declare that they believed otherwise. Outside, the wind shrieked and the rain dashed against the ground in a solid sheet. It was a typical February storm for Southern California. At the missions, the Frailes had cared for the stock and had closed the buildings for the night. At every great hacienda, big fires were burning in the houses. The timid people there kept to their little adobe huts, glad for shelter. And here in the little pueblo of Reina de Los Angeles, where in years to come a great city would grow, the tavern on one side of the plaza housed for the time being men who would sprawl before the fire until the dawn rather than face the beating rain. Sergeant Pedro Gonzalez, by virtue of his rank and size, hogged the fireplace, and a corporal and three soldiers from the Presidio sat at table, a little in rear of him, drinking their thin wine and playing at cards. An Indian servant crouched on his heels in one corner, no neophyte who had accepted the religion of the Frailes, but a Gentile and a renegade. For this was in the day of the decadence of the missions, and there was little peace between the robed Franciscans who followed in the footsteps of the sainted Junipero Serra, who had founded the first mission at San Diego del Alcala, and thus made possible an empire, and those who followed the politicians and had high places in the army. The men who drank wine in the tavern at Reina de Los Angeles had no wish for a spying neophyte about them. Just now conversation had died out, a fact that annoyed the fat landlord and caused him some fear. For Sergeant Pedro Gonzalez in an argument was Sergeant Gonzalez at peace. And unless he could talk, the big soldier might feel moved to action and start a brawl. Twice before Gonzalez had done so, to the great damage of furniture and men's faces, and the landlord had appealed to the comandante of the Presidio, Captain Ramon, only to be informed that the captain had an abundance of troubles of his own, and that running an inn was not one of them. So the landlord regarded Gonzalez warily, and edged closer to the long table, and spoke in an attempt to start a general conversation and so avert trouble. "They are saying in the pueblo," he announced, "that this Señor Zorro is abroad again." His words had an effect that was both unexpected and terrible to witness. Sergeant Pedro Gonzalez hurled his half-filled wine mug to the hard dirt floor, straightened suddenly on the bench, and crashed a ponderous fist down upon the table, causing wine and mugs and cards and coin to scatter in all directions. The corporal and the three soldiers retreated a few feet in sudden fright, and the red face of the landlord blanched. The native sitting there in the corner started to creep toward the door, having determined that he preferred the storm outside to the big sergeant's anger. "Señor Zorro, eh?" Gonzalez cried in a terrible voice. "Is it my fate always to hear that name? Señor Zorro, eh? Mr. Fox, in other words. He imagines, I take it, that he is as cunning as one. By the saints, he raises as much stench." Gonzalez gulped, turned to face them squarely and continued his tirade. He runs up and down the length of El Camino Real like a goat on the high hills. He wears a mask, and he flashes a pretty blade, they tell me. He uses the point of it to carve his hated letter Z on the cheek of his foe. Ha, the mark of Zorro, they are calling it. A pretty blade he has, in truth, but I cannot swear as to the blade. I've never seen it. He will not do me the honor of letting me see it. Señor Zorro's depredations never occur in the vicinity of Sergeant Pedro Gonzalez. Perhaps the Señor Zorro can tell us the reason for that. Ha. Huh. He glared at the men before him, threw up his upper lip, and let the ends of his great black mustache bristle. They are calling him the Curse of Capistrano now, the fat landlord observed, stooping to pick up the wine mug and cards and hoping to filch a coin in the process. Curse of the entire highway and whole mission chain, Sergeant Gonzalez roared. A cutthroat he is. A thief. Ha! A common fellow presuming to get him a reputation for bravery because he robs a hacienda or so and frightens a few women and locals. Señor Zorro, eh? Here is one fox it gives me pleasure to hunt. Curse of Capistrano, eh? I know I have led an evil life, but I only ask of the saints one thing now, that they forgive me my sins long enough to grant me the boon of standing face to face with this pretty highwayman. There is a reward, the landlord began. You snatched the very words from my lips, Sergeant Gonzalez protested. There is a pretty reward for the fellow's capture, offered by His Excellency the Governor. And what good fortune has come to my blade? I am away on duty at San Juan Capistrano, and the fellow makes his play at Santa Barbara. I am at Reina de Los Angeles, and he takes a fat purse at San Luis Rey. I dine at San Gabriel, let us say, and he robs at San Diego de Alcala. A pest he is. Once I met him. Sergeant Gonzalez choked on his wrath and reached for the wine mug, which the landlord had filled again and placed at his elbow. He gulped down the contents. Well, he never has visited us here, the landlord said with a sigh of thanksgiving. Good reason, fat one. Ample reason. We have a presidio here and a few soldiers. He rides far away from any presidio, does this pretty Señor Zorro. He is like a fleeting sunbeam. I grant him that, and with about as much real courage. Sergeant Gonzalez relaxed on the bench again, and the landlord gave him a glance that was full of relief, and began to hope that there would be no breakage of mugs and furniture and men's faces this rainy night. Yet this Señor Zorro must rest at times. He must eat and sleep, the landlord said. It is certain that he must have some place for hiding and recuperation. Some fine day, the soldiers will trail him out to his den. Ha, Gonzalez replied. Of course the man has to eat and sleep. And what is it that he claims now? He says that he is no real thief, by the saints. He is but punishing those who mistreat the men of the missions, he says. Friend of the oppressed, eh? He left a placard at Santa Barbara recently stating as much, did he not? Ah. And what may be the reply to that? The frailes of the missions are shielding him, hiding him, giving him his meat and drink. Shake down a robed fray, and you'll find some trace of this pretty highwayman's whereabouts, else I am a lazy civilian. I've no doubt that you speak the truth, the landlord replied. I put it not past the frailes to do such a thing. But may the Señor Zorro never visit us here. And why not, fat one? Sergeant Gonzalez cried in a voice of thunder. Am I not here? Have I not my blade at my side? Are you an owl, in this daylight, that you cannot see as far as the end of your puny, crooked nose? By the saints. I mean, said the landlord quickly, with some alarm, that I have no wish to be robbed. To be robbed of what, fat one? Of a jug of weak wine and a meal? Have you riches, fool? Ha, let the fellow come. Let this bold and cunning Signor Zorro but enter that door and step before us. Let him make a bow, as they say he does, and let his eyes twinkle through his mask. Let me but face the fellow for an instant, and I claim the generous reward offered by his excellency. He is perhaps afraid to venture so near the Presidio, the landlord said. More wine, Gonzales howled. More wine, fat one, and place it to my account. When I have earned the reward, you shall be paid in full. I promise it on my word as a soldier. Ha! Were this brave and cunning Signor Zorro, this curse of Capistrano, but to make entrance at that door now. The door was suddenly opened. Chapter 2. On the Heels of the Storm. In came a gust of wind and rain, and a man with it, and the candles flickered and one was extinguished. This sudden entrance in the midst of the sergeant's bow startled them all, and Gonzales drew his blade halfway from its scabbard as his words died in his throat. The local was quick to close the door again to keep out the wind. The newcomer turned and faced them. The landlord gave another sigh of relief. It was not Signor Zorro, of course. It was Don Diego Vega, a fair youth of excellent blood and 24 years, noted the length of El Camino Real for his small interest in the really important things of life. Ha! Gonzales cried, and slammed his blade home. Is it that I startled you somewhat, senores? Don Diego asked politely in a thin voice, glancing around the big room and nodding to the men before him. If you did, senor, it was because you entered on the heels of the storm, the sergeant retorted. It would not be your own energy that would startle any man. Grunted Don Diego, throwing aside his sombrero and flinging off his soaked serape. Your remarks border on the perilous, my raucous friend. Gonna be that you intend to take me to task. It is true, continued Don Diego, that I do not have a reputation for riding like a fool at risk of my neck, fighting like an idiot with every newcomer, and playing the guitar under every woman's window like a simpleton. Yet I do not care to have these things you deem my shortcomings flaunted in my face. Ha! Gonzales cried, half in anger. We have an agreement, Sergeant Gonzales, that we can be friends, and I can forget the wide difference of birth and breeding that yawns between us, only as long as you curb your tongue and stand my comrade. Your boasts amuse me, and I buy for you the wine that you crave. It is a pretty arrangement. But ridicule me again, senor, either in public or in private, and the agreement is at an end. I may mention that I have some small influence. Your pardon, caballero, and my good friend, the alarmed Sergeant Gonzales cried now. You are storming worse than the tempest outside, and merely because my tongue happened to slip. Hereafter, if any man ask, you are nimble of wit and quick with the blade, always ready to fight or to make love. You are a man of action, caballero. Ha! Does any dare doubt it? He glared around the room, half drawing his blade again, and then he slammed the sword home and threw back his head and roared with laughter, and then clapped Don Diego between the shoulders, and the fat landlord hurried with more wine, knowing well that Don Diego Vega would stand the score. For this peculiar friendship between Don Diego and Sergeant Gonzales was the talk of El Camino Real. Don Diego came from a family of blood that ruled over thousands of broad acres, countless herds of horses and cattle, great fields of grain. Don Diego, in his own right, had a hacienda that was well like a small empire, and a house in the pueblo also, and was destined to inherit from his father more than a thrice what he had now. But Don Diego was unlike the other full-blooded youths of the times. It appeared that he disliked action. He seldom wore his blade, except as a matter of style and apparel. He was damnably polite to all women, and paid court to none. He sat in the sun and listened to the wild tales of other men, and now and then smiled. He was the opposite of Sergeant Pedro Gonzalez in all things, and yet they were together frequently. It was as Don Diego had said. He enjoyed the sergeant's boasts, and the sergeant enjoyed the free wine. What more could either ask in the way of fair arrangement? Now Don Diego went to stand before the fire and dry himself, holding a mug of red wine in one hand. He was only medium in size, yet he possessed health and good looks, and it was the despair of proud dueñas that he could not glance a second time at the pretty señoritas they protected, and for whom they sought desirable husbands. Gonzalez, afraid that he had angered his friend, and that the free wine would also be at an end, now strove to make peace. "Caballero, we have been speaking of this notorious Señor Zorro," he said. "We have been regarding in conversation this fine curse of Capistrano, as some nimble-witted fool has seen fit to term the pest of the highway." "What about him?" Don Diego asked, putting down his wine mug and hiding a yawn behind his hand. Those who knew Don Diego best declared he yawned 10 score times a day. "I have been remarking, caballero," said the sergeant, "that this fine Señor Zorro never appears in my vicinity, and that I am hoping the good saints will grant me the chance of facing him some fine day, that I may claim the reward offered by the governor. Señor Zorro, eh? Ha." "Let us not speak of him," Don Diego begged, turning from the fireplace and throwing out one hand as if in protest. "Shall it be that I never hear of anything except deeds of bloodshed and violence? Would it be possible in these turbulent times for a man to listen to words of wisdom regarding music or the poets?" "Meal mush and goat's milk," snorted Sergeant Gonzalez in huge disgust. "If this Señor Zorro wishes to risk his neck, let him. It is his own neck, by the saints. A cutthroat, a thief, ha." "I have been hearing considerable concerning his work," Don Diego went on to say. "The fellow, no doubt, is sincere in his purpose. He has robbed none except officials who have stolen from the missions and the poor, and punished none except brutes who mistreat the locals. He has slain no man, I understand. Let him have this little day in the public eye, my sergeant." "I would rather have the reward." "Earn it," Don Diego said. "Capture the man." "Ah, dead or alive, the governor's proclamation says. I myself have read it." "Then stand you up to him and run him through, if such a thing pleases you," Don Diego retorted. "And tell me all about it afterward. But spare me now." "It will be a pretty story," Gonzalez cried. "And you shall have it entire, caballero, word by word. How I played with him, how I laughed at him as we fought, how I pressed him back after time and ran him through." "Afterward, but not now," Don Diego cried, exasperated. "Landlord, more wine. The only manner in which to stop this raucous boaster is to make his wide throat so slick with wine that the words cannot climb out of it." The landlord quickly filled the mugs. Don Diego sipped at his wine slowly, as a gentleman should, while Sergeant Gonzalez took his in two great gulps, and then the scion of the House of Vega stepped across to the bench and reached for his sombrero and his serape. "What?" the sergeant cried. "You are going to leave us at such an early hour, Caballero? You are going to face the fury of that beating storm?" "At least I am brave enough for that," Don Diego replied, smiling. "But I ran over from my house for a pot of honey. The fools feared the rain too much to fetch me some this day from the hacienda. Get me one, landlord." "I shall escort you safely home through the rain," Sergeant Gonzalez cried, for he knew full well that Don Diego had excellent wine of age there. "You shall remain here before the roaring fire," Don Diego told him firmly. "I do not need an escort of soldiers from the Presidio to cross the plaza. I am going over accounts from my secretary, and possibly may return to the tavern after we have finished. I wanted the pot of honey that we might eat as we worked." "Ah, and why did you not send that secretary of yours for the honey, Caballero? Why be wealthy and have servants if a man cannot send them on errands on such a stormy night?" "He is an old man and feeble," Don Diego explained. "He also is secretary to my aged father. The storm would kill him. Landlord, serve all here with wine and put it to my account. I may return when my books have been straightened." Don Diego Vega picked up the pot of honey, wrapped his serape around his head, opened the door, and plunged into the storm and darkness. "There goes a man," Gonzalez cried, flourishing his arms. "He is my friend, that caballero, and I would have all men know it. He seldom wears a blade, and I doubt whether he can use one, but he is my friend. The flashing dark eyes of lovely señoritas do not disturb him, yet I swear he is a pattern of a man." "Music and the poets, eh? Ha! Has he not the right, if such is his pleasure? Is he not Don Diego Vega? Has he not blue blood and broad acres and great storehouses filled with goods? Is he not liberal? He may stand on his head or wear petticoats if it please him, yet I swear he is a pattern of a man." The soldiers echoed his sentiments, since they were drinking Don Diego's wine and did not have the courage to combat the sergeant's statements anyway. The fat landlord served them with another round, since Don Diego would pay. For it was beneath a Vega to look at his score in a public tavern, and the fat landlord many times had taken advantage of this fact. "He cannot endure the thought of violence or bloodshed," Sergeant Gonzalez continued. "He is as gentle as a breeze of spring. Yet he has a firm wrist and a deep eye. It merely is the caballero's manner of seeing life. Did I but have his youth and good looks and riches, ha, there would be a stream of broken hearts from San Diego de Alcala to San Francisco de Assis." "And broken heads," the corporal offered. "Ha, and broken heads, comrade. I would rule the country. No youngster should stand long in my way. Out with the blade and at them. Cross Pedro Gonzalez, eh? Ha. Through the shoulder, neatly. Ha. Through a lung." Gonzalez was open his feet now, and his blade had leaped from its scabbard. He swept it back and forth through the air, thrust, parried, lunged, advanced and retreated, shouted his oaths and roared his laughter as he fought with shadows. "That is the matter of it," he screeched to the fireplace. "What have we here? Two of you against one. So much the better, senores. We love brave odds. Ha! Have at you, dog. Die, hound. One side, poltroon." He reeled against the wall, gasping, his breath almost gone, the point of his blade resting on the floor, his great face purple with exertion, and the wine had consumed, while the corporal and the soldiers and the fat landlord laughed long and loudly at this bloodless battle from from which Sergeant Pedro Gonzalez had emerged the unquestioned victor. Were this fine Señor Zorro only before me here and now, the sergeant gasped. And again, the door was opened suddenly, and a man entered the inn on a gust of the storm. Chapter 3. Señor Zorro Pays a Visit. The native hurried forward to fasten the door against the force of the wind, and then retreated to his corner again. The newcomer had his back toward those in the long room. They could see that his sombrero was pulled far down on his head, as if to prevent the wind from whisking it away, and that his body was enveloped in a long cloak that was wringing wet. With his back still toward them, he opened the cloak and shook the raindrops from it, and then folded it across his breast again as the fat landlord hurried forward, rubbing his hands together in expectation, for he deemed that here was some caballero off the highway who would pay good coin for food and bed and care for his horse. When the landlord was within a few feet of him in the door, the stranger whirled around. The landlord gave a little cry of fear and retreated with speed. The corporal gurgled deep down in his throat. The soldiers gasped. Sergeant Pedro Gonzalez allowed his lower jaw to drop and let his eyes bulge. For the man who stood straight before them had a black mask over his face that effectually concealed his features, and through the two slits in it, his eyes glittered ominously. "Ah, what have we here?" Gonzalez gasped. Finally, some presence of mind returning to him. The man before them bowed. "Señor Zorro, at your service," he said. "By the saints, Señor Zorro, eh?" Gonzalez cried. "Do you doubt it, Señor? If you are indeed Señor Zorro, then have you lost your wits?" the sergeant declared. "What is the meaning of that speech?" "You are here, are you not? You have entered the inn, have you not? By all the saints, you have walked into a trap, my pretty highwayman." "Will the Señor please explain?" Señor Zorro asked. His voice was deep and held a peculiar ring. "Are you blind? Are you without sense?" Gonzalez demanded. "Am I not here? And what has that to do with it? Am I not a soldier?" "At least you wear a soldier's garb, Señor." "By the saints, and can you not see the good corporal and three of our comrades? Have you come to surrender your wicked sword, Señor? Are you finished playing at rogue?" Señor Zorro laughed, not unpleasantly, but he did not take his eyes from Gonzalez. "Most certainly I have not come to surrender," he said. "I am on business, Señor." "Business?" Gonzalez queried. 4 days ago, Señor, you brutally beat a local who had won your dislike. The affair happened on the road between here and the mission at San Gabriel. He was a surly dog and got in my way. And how does it concern you, my pretty highwayman?" "I am the friend of the oppressed, Señor, and I have come to punish you." "Come to punish me, fool? You punish me? I shall die of laughter before I can run you through. You are as good as dead, Señor Zorro. His Excellency has offered a pretty price for your carcass. If you are a religious man, say your prayers. I would not have it said that I slew a man without giving him time to repent for his crimes. I gave you the space of 100 heartbeats." "You are generous, Señor, but there is no need for me to say my prayers." "Then I must do my duty," said Gonzalez, and lifted the point of his blade. "Corporal, you will remain by the table, and the men also. This fellow and the reward he means are mine. He blew out the ends of his mustache and advanced carefully, not making the mistake of underestimating his antagonist, for there had been certain tales of the man's skill with the blade. And when he was within the proper distance, he recoiled suddenly, as if a snake had warned of a strike. For Señor Zorro had allowed one hand to come from beneath his cloak, and the hand held a pistol, most damnable of weapons to Sergeant Gonzalez. "Back, Señor," Señor Zorro warned. "Ha, so that is the way of it," Gonzalez cried. "You carry that devil's weapon and threaten men with it? Such things are for use only at a long distance and against inferior foes. Gentlemen prefer the trusty blade." "Back, Señor. There is death in this you call the devil's weapon. I shall not warn again." "Somebody told me you were a brave man," Gonzalez taunted, retreating a few feet. "It has been whispered that you would meet any man foot to foot and cross blades with him. I have believed it of you. Can it be, Señor, that you lack the courage I have heard you possess?" Señor Zorro laughed again. "As to that, you shall see presently," he said. "The use of this pistol is necessary at the present time. I find myself pitted against large odds in this tavern, Señor. I shall cross blades with you gladly when I have made such a proceeding safe." "I wait anxiously," Gonzalez sneered. "The corporal and soldiers will retreat to that far corner," Señor Zorro directed. "Landlord, you will accompany them. The local will go there also." "Quickly, señores, thank you. I do not wish to have any of you disturbing me while I am punishing this sergeant here." "Ah," Gonzalez screeched in fury. "We shall soon see as to the punishing, my pretty fox." "I shall hold the pistol in my left hand," Señor Zorro continued. "I shall engage this sergeant with my right in the proper manner. As I fight, I shall keep an eye on the corner. The first move from any of you, señores, means that I fire. I am expert with this you have termed the devil's weapon, and if I fire, some men shall cease to exist on this earth of ours. It is understood." The corporal and soldiers and landlord did not take the trouble to answer. Señor Zorro looked Gonzalez straight in the eyes again, and a chuckle came from behind his mask. "Sergeant, you will turn your back until I can draw my blade," he directed. "I give you my word as a caballero that I shall not make a foul attack." "As a caballero," Gonzalez sneered. "I said it, Señor," Zorro replied, his voice ringing a threat. Gonzalez shrugged his shoulders and turned his back. In an instant, he heard the voice of the highwayman again. "On guard, Señor." Chapter 4. Swords clash, and Pedro explains. Gonzalez whirled at the word, and his blade came up. He saw that Señor Zorro had drawn his sword, and that he was holding the pistol in his left hand high above his head. Moreover, Señor Zorro was chuckling still, and the sergeant became infuriated. The blades clashed. Sergeant Gonzalez had been accustomed to battling with men who gave ground when they pleased and took it when they could, who went this way and that seeking an advantage, now advancing, now retreating, now swinging to left or right as their skill directed them. But here he faced a man who fought in quite a different way. For Señor Zorro, it appeared, was as if rooted to one spot and unable to turn his face in any other direction. He did not give an inch, nor did he advance, nor a step to either side. Gonzalez attacked furiously, as was custom, and he found the point of his blade neatly parried. He used more caution then, and tried what tricks he knew, but they seemed to avail him nothing. He attempted to pass around the man before him. The other's blade drove him back. He tried to retreat, hoping to draw the other out. But Señor Zorro stood his ground and forced Gonzalez to attack again. As for the highwayman, he did not except put up a defense. Anger got the better of Gonzalez then, for he knew the corporal was jealous of him, and that the tale of this fight would be told to all the Pueblo tomorrow, and so travel up and down the length of El Camino Real. He attacked furiously, hoping to drive Señor Zorro off his feet and make an end of it. But he found that his attack ended as if against a stone wall. His blade was turned aside, his breast crashed against that of his antagonist, and Señor Zorro merely threw out his chest and hurled him back half a dozen steps. "Fight, Señor," Señor Zorro said. "Fight yourself, cutthroat and thief," the exasperated sergeant cried. "Don't stand like a piece of the hills, fool. Is it against your religion to take a step?" The highwayman replied, chuckling again. Sergeant Gonzalez realized then that he had been angry, and he knew an angry man cannot fight with the blade as well as a man who controls his temper. So he became deadly cold now, and his eyes narrowed, and all boasting was gone from him. He attacked again, but now he was alert, seeking an unguarded spot through which he could thrust without courting disaster himself. He fenced as he never had fenced in his life before. He cursed himself for having allowed wine and food to rob him of his wind. From the front, from either side, he attacked, only to be turned back again, all his tricks solved almost before he tried them. He had been watching his antagonist's eyes, of course, and now he saw a change. They seemed to be laughing through the mask, and now they had narrowed and seemed to send forth flakes of fire. "We have had enough of playing," Señor Zorro said. "It is time for the punishment." And suddenly he began to press the fighting, taking step after step, slowly and methodically going forward and forcing Gonzalez backward. The tip of his blade seemed to be a serpent's head with a thousand tongues. Gonzalez felt himself at the other's mercy, but he gritted his teeth and tried to control himself and fight on. Now he was with his back against the wall, but in such a position that Señor Zorro could give him battle and watch the men in the corner at the same time. He knew the highwayman was playing with him. He was ready to swallow his pride and call upon the corporal and soldiers to rush in and give him aid. And then there came a sudden battering at the door, which the native had bolted. The heart of Gonzalez gave a great leap. Somebody was there, wishing to enter. Whoever it was would think it peculiar that the door was not thrown open instantly by the fat landlord or his servant. Perhaps help was at hand. "We are interrupted, Señor," the highwayman said. "I regret it, for I will not have the time to give you the punishment you deserve, and will have to arrange to visit you another time. You scarcely are worth a double visit." The pounding at the door was louder now. Gonzalez raised his voice. "Ha, we have Señor Zorro here." "Poltroon," the highwayman cried. His blade seemed to take on a new life. It darted in and out with a speed that was bewildering. It caught a thousand beams of light from the flickering candles and hurled them back. And suddenly it darted in and hooked itself properly, and Sergeant Gonzalez felt his sword torn from his grasp and saw it go flying through the air. "So," Señor Zorro cried. Gonzalez awaited the stroke. A sob came into his throat that this must be the end instead of on a field of battle where a soldier wishes it. But no steel entered his breath to bring forth his life's blood. Instead, Señor Zorro swung his left hand down, passed the hilt of his blade to it, and grasped it beside the pistol's butt, and with his right he slapped Pedro Gonzalez once across the cheek. "That for a man who mistreats helpless locals," he cried. Gonzalez roared in rage and shame. Somebody was trying to smash the door in now, but Señor Zorro appeared to give it little thought. He sprang back and sent his blade into its scabbard like a flash. He swept the pistol before him and thus threatened all in the long room. He darted to a window, sprang upon a bench. "Until a later time, Señor," he cried, and then he went through the window as a mountain goat jumps from a cliff, taking its covering with him. In rushed the wind and rain, and the candles went out. After him, Gonzalez screeched, springing across the room and grasping for his blade again. "Unbar the door, out and after him. Remember, there is a generous reward." The corporal reached the door first and threw it open. In stumbled two men of the Pueblo, eager for wine and an explanation of the fastened door. Sergeant Gonzalez and his comrades drove over them, left them sprawling, and dashed into the storm. But there was little use in it. It was so dark a man could not see a distance of a horse's length. The beating rain was enough to obliterate tracks almost instantly. Señor Zorro was gone, and no man could tell in what direction. There was a tumult, of course, in which the men of the Pueblo joined. Sergeant Gonzalez and the soldiers returned to the inn to find it full of men they knew. And Sergeant Gonzalez knew, also, that his reputation was now at stake. "Nobody but a highwayman, nobody but a cutthroat and thief would have done it," he cried aloud. "How is that, brave one?" cried a man in the throng near the doorway. "This pretty Señor Zorro knew, of course. Some days ago I broke the thumb of my sword hand while fencing at San Juan Capistrano. No doubt the word was passed to this Señor Zorro, and he visits me at such a time that he may afterward say he had vanquished me." The corporal and soldiers and landlord stared at him, but none was brave enough to say a word. "Those who were here can tell you, señores," Gonzalez went on. "The Señor Zorro came in at the door and immediately drew a pistol, devil's weapon, from beneath his cloak. He presented at us, and forces all except me to retire to that corner. I refuse to retire." "Then you shall fight me," says this pretty highwayman, "and I draw my blade, thinking to make an end of the pest." "And what does he tell me then?" "We shall fight," he says, "and I will outpoint you, so that I may boast of it afterward. In my left hand I hold the pistol. If your attack is not to my liking, I shall fire, and afterward run you through, and so make an end of a certain sergeant." The corporal gasped, and the fat landlord was almost ready to speak, but thought better of it when Sergeant Gonzalez glared at him. "Could anything be more devilish?" Gonzalez asked. "I was to fight, and yet I would get a devil's chunk of lead in my carcass if I pressed the attack. Was there ever such a farce? It shows the stuff of which this pretty highwayman is made. Some day I shall meet him when he holds no pistol. And then..." "But how did he get away?" someone in the crowd asked. "He heard those at the door. He threatened me with the devil's pistol and forced me to toss my blade in yonder far corner. He threatened us all, ran to the window, and sprang through. And how could we find him in the darkness or track him through the sheets of rain? But I am determined now. In the morning I go to my Captain Ramon and ask permission to be absolved from all other duty, that I may take some comrades and run down this pretty Señor Zorro. Ha! We shall go fox hunting." The excited crowd about the door suddenly parted, and Don Diego Vega hurried into the tavern. "What is this I hear?" he asked. "They are saying Señor Zorro has paid a visit here." "'Tis a true word, caballero," Gonzalez answered, "and we were speaking of the cutthroat here this evening." Had you remained instead of going home to work with your secretary, you should have seen the entire affair. Were you not here? Can you not tell me? Don Diego asked. But I pray you not make the whole tale too bloody. I cannot see why men must be violent. Where is the highwayman's dead body? Gonzalez choked. The fat landlord turned away to hide his smile. The corporal and soldiers began picking up wine mugs to keep busy at this dangerous moment. There is no body, Gonzalez managed to say. Have done with your modesty, Sergeant, Don Diego cried. Am I not your friend? Did you not promise to tell me the story if you met this cutthroat? I know you would spare my feelings, knowing that I do not love violence. Yet I am eager for the facts because you, my friend, have been engaged with this fellow. How much was the reward? By the saints, Gonzalez swore. Come, Sergeant, out with the tale. Landlord, give us all the wine, and we may celebrate this affair. Your tale, Sergeant. Shall you leave the army, now that you have earned the reward, and purchase a hacienda and take a wife? Sergeant Gonzalez choked again and reached gropingly for a wine mug. You promised me, Don Diego continued, that you would tell me the whole thing, word by word. Did he not say as much, landlord? You declared that you would relate how you played with him, how you laughed at him while you fought, how you pressed him back after a time and then ran him through. By the saints, Sergeant Gonzalez roared. The words coming from between his lips like peals of thunder. It is beyond the endurance of any man. You, Don Diego, my friend. Your modesty ill becomes you at such a time, Don Diego said. You promised the tale, that I would have it. What does the Señor Zorro look like? Have you peered at the dead face beneath the mask? It is perhaps some man that we all know. Cannot someone of you tell me the facts? You stand here like so many speechless images of men. Wine, or I choke, Gonzalez howled. Don Diego, you are my good friend, and I will cross swords with any man who belittles you. But do not try me too far this night. I fail to understand, Don Diego said. I have but asked you to tell me a story of the fight, how you mocked him as you battled, how you pressed him back at will, and presently ended it by running him through. Enough. Am I to be taunted? The big sergeant cried. He gulped down the wine and hurled the mug far from him. Is it possible that you did not win the battle? Don Diego asked. But surely this pretty highwayman could not stand up before you, my sergeant. How was the outcome? He had a pistol. Why did you not take it away from him then and crowd it down his throat? But perhaps that is what you did. Here is more wine, my sergeant. Drink. But Sergeant Gonzalez was thrusting his way through the throng at the door. I must not forget my duty, he said. I must hurry to the Presidio and report his occurrence to the Comandante. But Sergeant, and as to this Señor Zorro, he will be meat for my blade before I am done, Gonzalez promised. And then, cursing horribly, he rushed away through the rain. The first time in his life he ever had allowed duty to interfere with his pleasure and had run from good wine. Don Diego smiled as he turned toward the fireplace. Thank you for listening to Sleepy. Good night.